This is Sudden Death. That's what this is. And this is a show that takes you inside things in a different way, a superficial, shallow surface way, and then deep down into the bowels in another sense. That's the way we do it around here. And so
that's right.
My name is Rashawn Merle. And your name is what? What is your name?
My name is Rashawn Merle.
No, that's my name. What is your name?
My name is Alex Riddle.
Alex Riddle, huh? Nice to meet you. Ready to go deep and go deep suddenly without any warning?
That's how I like to do it.
Oh, good. Okay, so, you know what's in the news?
All kinds of stuff.
That's right, all kinds of stuff there. Floods and droughts. And speaking of droughts, there's a drought on the Supreme Court. Do you see what I did there? We in the business call that a segue. Impressive, right? There you go. That's exactly what I thought, too. The Supreme Court has a drought because your favorite Supreme Court justice, not mine, mine was Clarence Thomas, but your favorite Supreme Court justice, well, he left this planet.
Mine?
Yes.
Or is that to the audience?
No, that's you, Alex Riddle, who thought his name was Rashawn Merle. He's gone. He's no longer with us. And he's been no longer with us for, a good 10 months, give or take. And
quite a while.
You know, the Supreme Court justice has 9 justices for a reason. One of the reasons is because the number was upped from 7 before, and now it's 9 a long time ago. And now the 9th justice gives kind of a tie-breaking vote in case of a very close Supreme Court case.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's only 8 justices because one of the 9 is, well, of course, no longer with us. And it's up to the president, of course, to nominate a Supreme Court justice to the U.S. Supreme Court. As you well know, as an avid news watcher for the past 10 months, there has been a refusal by Congress to approve, to advise and consent, if you will, of the Supreme Court justice that was nominated. This Merrick Garland character who now falls into the annals of history as one commentator put it, a Jeopardy question. Because he has no relevance in our jurisprudence on the Supreme Court now because he never got it confirmed and never will. However, we've got Donald Trump coming in a little while, and he's going to nominate a Supreme Court justice. I bet you can't wait. You're on the edge of your seat, aren't you?
I think we all are. Speaking on behalf of the American people.
Well, they don't call you American people, Alex, for nothing now, do they?
And yeah,
there's a reason for that.
Not for nothing.
And this is precisely the reason. So there's a pretty big Supreme Court nomination on the way. And with every Supreme Court nomination, there's always a battle.
Great responsibility.
Well, there's that. And there's also a battle on the Hill, the Capitol Hill, if you will. The Senate specifically in the confirmation hearing of said Supreme Court justice. Now, as you might imagine, this nomination process is giving the left, liberals, progressives, Democrats, and all of their ilk quite the consternation.
Of course.
And if you want liberal ilk consternation, there's no better place to go than the Daily Kos. I think America would agree with that.
The consternation is real, y'all.
That's right. That's the Texas version of the liberal consternation. If it's the New York version of consternation, it's the consternation is real because that is how they talk in New York. Just so you know. That's,
I'll give you about a 40% on that one. Okay. And that's generous.
Well, they don't call you Generous Gene for nothing now, do they?
Don't call me at all.
Okay, fine. They do call you that for nothing. There, you happy now?
Also not an accurate statement
calm
about
down.
Reality.
Let's calm down, please. Let's go to the Daily Kos. This guy, apparently named Kos, he suggests that the Senate Democrats should filibuster Donald Trump's Supreme Court nominee for 4 years. Now, we'll get to why that could never happen in a moment, i.e. we'll read his article where he basically admits that will never happen. But first, let's look at the reasoning behind this obstructionism in the works before we even get a president sworn into office, the President Trump. The reason for that is because this character, we'll call him Coase, he somehow believes the election was illegitimate, the one of Donald Trump, of course. In fact, he says, when a government is legitimately elected, you oppose it. You are the loyal opposition. When a government is illegitimately elected, you resist it. Today, we are the resistance. And that means standing in the way of everything that illegitimate government does. Now, if we stop there for a moment, just that snippet.
It sounds like a rejected speech from, like, the, you know, the new Star Wars movie. Well, like the script writer was like, that sucks. We can't put that in the movie.
Would that have been in the crawl at the beginning of the movie and it got rejected?
Yeah, maybe.
But the premise here of this entire article is that the election was illegitimate. Now,
right.
Obviously in this country, we have a system that we use to elect our presidents. We use the Electoral College, you see. And in the 2016 election, one candidate got more than half of all the Electoral College votes, i.e. 270. And that one was Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And he did it in a legitimate way. In fact, there were gadflies out there, whatever that means, i.e. Jill Stein, who tried to force a recount in the closest states that Donald Trump won. By the way, not in the closest states that Hillary Clinton won, like Minnesota and New Hampshire, just the ones that Donald Trump won very narrowly.
Mm-hmm.
And after the recount was done, well, they didn't do a recount in Michigan because the courts there rejected the phoniness of the Jill Stein argument that she had no standing to bring anything because she was at 1% and had no chance of winning. But leave that aside. In Wisconsin, where she did con those people into granting a recount, Donald Trump actually gained a net of 131 or so votes. So there we go with that. But anyway, the recount suggests and affirms that the election indeed was legitimate, but this character is saying it was illegitimate.
Yeah, like one of the problems with coming into these sort of these places, like, you know, who have their loyal readership and they're very much speaking to that loyal readership,
i.e., preaching to the choir.
You know, you might even call it that. You know, you come in and you, without prior knowledge of what the hell they're talking about, like, 8:44 a.m., y'all. You would not believe the words that I didn't say just now.
This is why you don't eat porridge right before a radio show.
No one does that. Okay. Anyway, so you don't have the background. You don't have the context. So you don't really know what this person means by illegitimately elected. I mean, I guess they're talking about the Electoral College.
Right.
They're talking about the system is illegitimate.
The left in general is jumping up and down, flailing their arms in the air over the fact that Hillary Clinton won the popular vote, yet Donald Trump was elected president. Therefore, the election was illegitimate in their view. They apparently have not read the Constitution. So, and they hardly ever do, to be fair.
Yeah. So, I mean, so that's it. That's all it is. If you lose the popular vote and win the election, then...
So that's probably the overarching argument. There's other arguments saying that this FBI director by the name of James Comey interfered with the election by opening in what they call a bogus FBI investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails. There's also the idea that Russia hacked into the DNC and John Podesta, the campaign manager's emails, and released all those emails day by day. And, you know, these things kind of add up to a view of the losers, a view of the illegitimate election. Now, of course, when Donald Trump was saying that the election was rigged, my, how far have we come? When he was saying the election was rigged, they were jumping up and down saying, this is outrageous. How dare you call this totally legitimate electoral process rigged? And now, since Donald Trump won, why?
Right.
But then again, that's neither here nor there. That's just the rank hypocrisy on display by certain segments of the population. But that is what the left writ large calls an illegitimate election. And now this Coase character doesn't specify, and the terrible arguments he makes about why the election was illegitimate, but we can assume that it had something to do with one or more of those factors.
Yeah, and, well, sure, like, there's the claim that it's the election is illegitimate, and then, but then he goes on today we are the resistance. That's his quote, AKA, you know, the Reformed Rebel Alliance.
Very Star Warsy.
It's very Star Wars.
Anticipating the Rogue One.
It's maybe a little bit Confederate.
Well, or that too.
maybe we should talk about it like that. Maybe you guys should just secede. I hear there's a precedent for that.
Well, there was a Cal exit movement that was trending on Twitter right after the election.
I know, and like, you know, that's just really taking cues from the people they would have called racist, trying to, you know, get Texas to secede, for example.
Y'all.
And then he says, and that, I guess, the resistance means standing in the way of everything that's in italics that illegitimate government does. Which, I mean, you know, all things considered, seems like not what will that accomplish? I remember, you know, very recently in the past, you know, during the Obama years, gridlock and, you know, all the general slowness of the Senate and
the person speaking right now,
the House to accomplish anything. And, this being just like, blamed on the Republicans and how
they were called obstructionists.
How could they do this? You know?
Well, there's also, you know, they're blamed for being racist to a black president. They just want a black man to succeed.
Oh, yeah.
That was another aspect. But now the Democrats don't want an orange man to succeed, so they're just as racist.
Exactly. Like, what? Oh, man. Well, anyway.
It would appear as though, you know, this guy does not understand how this election works. And so he starts this very short piece off with this premise. And he goes back to what Senator Cruz said about the Merrick Garland nomination, saying that there is a precedent for a Supreme Court with fewer than 9 justices. Well, yeah, because the Supreme Court didn't always have 9 justices. There were times when it had fewer than 9 justices. That's not to say that we should or should not have fewer than 9 justices, but it's happened before is the point. But that really doesn't that doesn't really help this particular argument, because the premise of this argument is not that there is a precedent for fewer than 9 justices. The premise of his argument is that the election was illegitimate, and so if the president-elect nominates a Supreme Court nominee, we should oppose it based on that. So, you know, when I read this, I immediately thought of the reasons why this would never happen, but then I didn't need to articulate them, because this Coast character goes on to say why this will never happen, which is, I find, very interesting, and yet he's jumping up and down saying people should do this. You know, he says that we should obstruct, and by we, I mean they, should obstruct any Trump nominee on the Supreme Court until either of these things happens. One, we have a president elected by at least a plurality of the American people. So, again, that's not how the election works. It's by the person who gets a majority of electoral college votes. That's how it's always worked. And there are reasons for that, which we can get into, but you can go look them up for your own self, because I have other things to talk about. Number two, the Republicans win a filibuster-proof majority in 2018. Well, that actually is very possible, because there are a lot of Democrats up in very red states in 2018, and a lot of states that Donald Trump won this time around. So it's extremely possible that the Republicans who have 52 seats in the Senate right now could easily pick up another 8 seats in 2018 if Donald Trump doesn't ruin his presidency the first two years. And then the third reason is that the Republicans eliminate the filibuster, which, you know, the Democrats did eliminate the filibuster for lower court judges back in 2013. Harry Reid did that. So speaking of precedents, there is a precedent for eliminating the filibuster in the Senate. Yep. And Republicans could very easily do that very quickly if the Democrats decided to take the stand on all Supreme Court nominees. And that would not last anywhere near 4 years.
Also, I just wanted to say for the record that just to give you some indication of how shoddily this article was written, he says, obstruct until either of these things happens and then lists 3 points.
That is your your daily Lenny P. Linguist Lips linguistic lesson for you folks out there. Try saying that 5 times fast. You can't.
What a subversive publication.
I have no idea what that word
they're
means.
They're subverting basic, grammar. That's cool.
Grammar, logic, common sense.
Yeah. Also, this idea of we have a president elected by at least a plurality of the American people. I assume he basically means majority. Only a plurality is not the same thing as majority. And
right,
I imagine
he was the president that the majority of the American people did not vote for. That's what he wants.
I imagine that he chose that word specifically because it's weaselly and basically doesn't mean anything.
Well, he chose it because he's bending over backwards to illegitimize, if you will, this election. And it just can't be done because the election was won legitimately. And so,
also the fake news thing. Did we talk about that?
Well, yeah,
as if that
to me that's such a tenuous argument, whatever that word means, because there's been fake news around since news has been around.
Right.
So, the left
called gossip or like that telephone hole game. If you've ever played that, it's like it's literally since. It was by
word
of mouth.
Since you were in third grade, you've been hearing about fake news.
Yeah.
So the left blames everything under the sun except Hillary Clinton for Hillary Clinton's loss. Newsflash, Hillary Clinton's fault. So why are they so afraid of the Supreme Court nominees in particular? Is there something about Donald Trump's philosophy about Supreme Court justices that would cause them to be so concerned about Donald Trump? Well, actually, yes, that's part of the reason. But, the first reason is that Hillary Clinton, in one of the debates, the last one in Las Vegas, said that she wanted a Supreme Court justice that would basically go around and fulfilling her left-wing causes and, looking out for this group or that group or implementing or that policy. Not necessarily someone who would uphold the Constitution. She never used the word Constitution in that. Donald Trump actually laid out a case for why he thought what he thought about a Supreme Court justice and what kind of qualifications that person should have. And, he did ultimately end up becoming the president, as we all know. And so he got the ability to choose who he wanted to. And we actually have a clip of a Donald Trump talking about a Supreme Court justices. So if we go to our fancy schmancy audio vault, we can play that right about now.
Buddy, the Supreme Court, it's what it's all about. Our country is so imperative that we have the right justices. Something happened recently where Justice Ginsburg made some very, very inappropriate statements toward me and toward a tremendous number of people, many, many millions of people that I represent. And she was forced to apologize, and apologize she did. But these were statements that should never, ever have been made. We need a Supreme Court that, in my opinion, is going to uphold the Second Amendment and all amendments, but the Second Amendment, which is under absolute siege. I believe if my opponent should win this race, which I truly don't think will happen, we will have a Second Amendment, which will be a very, very small replica of what it is right now. But I feel that it's absolutely important that we uphold because of the fact that it is under such trauma. I feel that the justices that I am going to appoint, and I've named 20 of them, the justices that I'm going to appoint will be pro-life. They will have a conservative bent. They will be protecting the Second Amendment. They are great scholars in all cases, and they are people of tremendous respect. They will interpret the Constitution the way the founders wanted it interpreted. And I believe that's very, very important. I don't think we should have justices appointed that decide what they want to hear. It's all about the Constitution and so important, the Constitution the way it was meant to be. And those are the people that I will appoint.
So, you know, that it took a while to get to the well there, but at the very end, he talked about Supreme Court justices who interpreted the Constitution the way it was meant to be now. And Fancy Pants Man, and Fancy Pants Man Harlan. Again, these English is difficult. That's called an originalist, someone who looks at the intent of the founders or uses the founders' original intent to try to determine what the founders wanted when they drafted the Constitution or what the legislator meant when they drafted the statute that's at issue in the Supreme Court case. You know, he said he wanted a pro-life justice. Well, you know, a pro-life justice is peachy keen, but you really want a justice who follows the Constitution and what was meant when it was written, not necessarily someone who has certain policy prescriptions. But, you know, Hillary Clinton was all about
right.
things like that. She wanted a, you know, a pro-choice justice, a justice who didn't follow the Second Amendment text so closely and so narrowly. So she didn't say anything about the Constitution, and that's basically what the left wants. The left wants a backdoor legislator in the Supreme Court, and you know, that's
sounds raunchy.
So again, this is almost 10 o'clock Eastern in the morning, and you're talking about raunchy things. I don't think the kids who are eating airports.
You brought up backdoor legislator.
Yes, I admittedly did, but that was obviously
admittedly
meant something different than what you apparently meant. But we'll leave that for now. And so, you know, Donald Trump is going to be appointing people off this list that he put out during the campaign. And the people on the list are going to have a certain judicial philosophy. Most of them are in the originalist vein, if you will. Now, people have different ideas of who a Supreme Court justice should be, what kind of philosophies they should hold. You know, I have my views. What are your views about a Supreme Court justice nominee? What kind of philosophy should they hold?
What are your views? You just said you had views. I don't have views. So I'd rather we just start with
you don't
your
have
views.
Eyes? You don't view things? No?
That's not
are
what
you blind?
That's not what views are.
It's not what do you mean it's not what views are? I've seen views in that context many a time. I've been around the block probably.
Have you been to the back door? You've been around the block to the back door?
I have gone in to a back door once or twice. But again, I don't see why that's relevant at all. It's, you know, buildings have multiple doors. Why just going through the front, right? There's more than one way to get inside. That's take advantage of what you got there.
Just keep talking.
I'm going to change.
Everything's going swimmingly.
The subject and get into George Leafs. He is he's not on a tree. He's actually a writer for Forbes. Forbes magazine is one of the big businessy / politics type magazines out there. And in a recent Forbes article online,
for all of you getting this under a rock.
Yeah, if you're Patrick Starr, that's who I'm talking to, clearly. He talks about what he wants in a Supreme Court justice. And he not just wants an originalist. He not only wants an originalist, but he also wants someone who doesn't feel bound by the concept of stare decisis. Ooh, look at me with my fancy schmancy Latin. I'm Latin Larry in high school, so I was known as because I could say the word stare decisis. So that's why they called me Latin Larry. They'd be like, hey, it's old Latin Larry coming. How you doing, Latin? And I'd be like, please call me Rashawn. So I can't tell you how many times that happened because it didn't happen at all. That's why I can't tell you how many times. But anyway, this person, Mr. Leaf, says that, you know, a Supreme Court justice shouldn't be bound by stare decisis. That, of course, is the idea that you use past Supreme Court case precedent to determine future Supreme Court cases that come up, obviously, in the future. It's a one of those fancy schmancy Latin words that means let the decision stand. Now, that's good for, I suppose, stability and predictability. But on the other hand, it's the opposite of good for, correcting bad precedent. We've seen time and time again that the Supreme Court has rendered very bad decisions, like in Plessy v. Ferguson, which all you in your social studies classes might know out there, was the Supreme Court case that enshrined in Supreme Court jurisprudence the separate but equal doctrine. It was used in school segregation cases, and it upheld the constitutionality of segregating public schools on the basis of there being one institution for white people, and that being just as equal as the institutions for black people, even though in practicality, in reality, the white people got the much fancier schmancier digs than the black people did. The black people got the bottom of the barrel stuff here. And so that is an example of where you should not let the decision stand. You should let the decision fall, and fall it did in the Brown v. Board of Education case. So that's what George Leaf is saying, that we shouldn't just be bound by decisions in the past that don't uphold the originalist view of the Constitution, the founder's intent. So which side of the debate are you on? Do you think that we should just let the decisions stand when we create these new Supreme Court decisions, or should we let the decisions fall? And I don't know the Latin for that. Sorry about that.
We should look that up. I definitely see the benefit in order and consistency, but
don't forget predictability.
Predictability, just any other words you got, just throw them in there.
Pudding.
Yum. Making me hungry now.
Even after that big old bowl of porridge?
Lost my train of thought.
Shoot you.
What are we talking about? Look, there's a butterfly.
Okay, let's get back to
there's a plant.
Supreme Court. Should we let the decision stand?
I see the benefit of the order, but your example was the classic example. The Supreme Court should be able to overturn its own mistakes and shouldn't be bound to them.
So to be clear, the Supreme Court can overturn its prior decisions now, but the practice and what they do most often is they use the doctrine of stare decisis. So this guy is saying, throw stare decisis out the window. Don't feel bound by decisions in the past that didn't follow the Constitution. You know, there are those out there who say that Roe v. Wade, whatever you may think of the abortion issue, but just on the constitutionality of it alone, that was a very badly decided decision on constitutional grounds. They bent over backwards to create this right to privacy by kind of picking off some of the different amendments in the Constitution and amalgamating them into this new fangled right, the right to privacy, that didn't actually exist.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would be the perversion, they say, of what the founders would have wanted in the Constitution and the one that was written. That's why he's saying, this George Leaf character, forget this stare decisis nonsense. For every Supreme Court case that comes to the court that's constitutional in nature, look to the Constitution each and every time to see what the founders intended when you write it. So that is his argument. But then, it's difficult for lower courts to kind of predict where the Supreme Court's going to be, what they would rule when they're ruling on these cases, because the cases go through the lower courts first and then get to the Supreme Court if the Supreme Court decides to take the case. And it's difficult to know, what the Supreme Court would say on something, because everyone's got their own interpretation of the Constitution, unfortunately. And so,
right. So basically this doctrine, what Leaf is proposing is go back to the Constitution every time you make a new decision, every time the Supreme Court makes a new decision, rather than the Supreme Court's precedent or history or whatever.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. So that's pretty simple. That's I mean, that almost seems to be like encompassed by the term originalist. But I guess it's sort of like a secondary, like a step two.
Right. That he says, well, actually he quotes another person by the name of Randy Barnett, who was a Georgetown University law professor. And, as a matter of fact, that's your favorite law professor in at least in the East Coast. And Mr. Barnett says that there should be two crucial, then word I can't pronounce because it's a very big word for Trump's Supreme Court nominations. One.
What page is this on?
It's only one page of the article. It's on the internet, so it's only one page.
Minus three pages.
Oh well.
Did you not get to the page?
Use a new
two?
Browser. There's only one page on mine, Buster. So I don't know what page you're looking at. Oh wait, there are three pages. I'm on page one. Anyway. This Barnett character says that judges who follow the stare decisis maxim are not inclined to overturn precedent. And while there is much to be said for stare decisis in most fields of law, stability and predictability are important after all, that isn't the case when it comes to constitutional rights. Erroneous decisions of the past should be reexamined whenever called into question. He goes on to say that judges who blindly adhere to stare decisis help to cement in place the vast federal administrative and regulatory state that often sacrifices individual rights on the altar of collectivist and authoritarian policies. You know, the Constitution has enshrined a full entire bill, chock full of rights. And those rights prevent the government from doing things to us that they shouldn't be doing. And if you just make up new things and change what the Constitution actually says, then you are in danger of eroding those rights. You give the government far more expansive power, as with the commerce power, to regulate interstate commerce, what is sold across state lines. That power, especially throughout the 20th century, was vastly expanded with the help of the Supreme Court. But, you know, if they had followed the Constitution and the originalist intent of what the Constitution says, then, you know, that power very likely would not have been expanded so much to give the government so much power. And, you know, there are issues with the First Amendment of free speech, freedom of the press, that the Supreme Court has grappled with over the centuries. To what extent should the government be able to regulate speech or the press? The press has a source. What if the source is vital to solving a crime? Does the media person have to reveal that source? Can you shout fire in a movie theater? Well, they said that no, you can't. Can you carry around a bazooka? Because the Second Amendment says you have the right to bear arms. Well, the Supreme Court, under the aforementioned Antonin Scalia, said no, there are actually limits on the kinds of firearms you can carry. What do police officers have to do before they search your house? You know, what if they're searching your car? Can they just search your car if they stop you for speeding? And then what if they find, you know, marijuana in your trunk? I mean, what gives them to, how far can they go and just search without a search warrant? You know, that's the Fourth Amendment of, you know, unreasonable searches and seizures. We talk about the Eighth Amendment. What constitutes cruel and unusual punishment? Is lethal injection cruel and unusual punishment? You know, what if the injection doesn't kill him right away? What if he suffers? Does that, you know, constitute cruel and unusual punishment? How far can the government go? So these are like big questions that the Supreme Court has to deal with all the time. And you want to make sure that you have a stable foundation in what the founders intended when you interpret these complex decisions. Because if you give the government the power to just, make up things and make up rights for the government that aren't in the Constitution, why, you could very well go to what Mr. Barnett and Mr. Leaf consider an authoritarian state. Because, you know, rights are eroded to such a degree that, you know, at some point there are no rights, at least the way they're originally supposed to be. And so that's what Mr. Leaf is saying here.
Right. So we can get some stability from the Constitution itself rather than from, you know, a precedent kind of situation.
Exactly. And, you know, the past Supreme Courts were made up with people with, you know, more progressive judicial philosophies. You know,
mm-hmm.
during the New Deal era, the president tried to really stack the Supreme Court and the lower courts with progressives in order to be able to kind of rubber stamp some of the programs that he was pushing through. And so, you know, if you have a Supreme Court that's has a majority of progressives or people who don't adhere to the Constitution, who view it as a, quote, living a document that can be changed, why in the world should you have to follow those bad precedents? You should use the Constitution now and forget this stare decisis. And so it'll be interesting to see if Donald Trump can appoint one, two, three, maybe four Supreme Court justices. You know, how far will the court go to getting rid of stare decisis? Will it ever do that? We shall see, and time will tell, as they say. But you seem to be a pretty big fan of keeping stare decisis. Is that correct?
I don't know what makes you say that.
Well, because of the what you just talked about, the predictability of the stare decisis a few minutes ago.
Right. So that's what Leaf is saying is a good thing in general for
is that
for
what
like
you
law
are saying
for society, right? And what I just said was originalism or going back to the Constitution every time provides some stability. You don't need to rely on stare decisis if you do this, right? That's what I was saying.
I see. So that's good. Now, the question then becomes, who exactly are the people that Donald Trump is going to nominate? I mean, he said appoint in that clip, but he's actually nominating people that have to be given advice and consent to by the Senate or the sentence, either one. If he can get a sentence that will confirm his Supreme Court nominees, that would be peachy. But I think he has to go through the Senate at the very least. And so, you know, Cable News Network, which is your favorite news network and certainly not mine, compiled a list, a very helpful list. Some would say a fancy schmancy list. 21 or 22, if you count Ted Cruz, people that Donald Trump has said.
I never count Ted Cruz.
Well, he's your senator, so you really should.
Oh.
Okay, so I'm glad we settled that. They have to compile a list of some of the people that are actually all the people that Donald Trump has put on this list of possible nominees. And since the election, he has reiterated the idea that he will stick to this list when choosing with whom he will replace the late great Antonin Scalia. And so, you know, the first person that they highlight is this guy by the name of William Pryor. Well, as you know, being the circuit court enthusiast that you are, you know very well that he sits in the 11th Circuit, the Court of Appeals. Now, for the plebiscites out there, Alex, please explain what part of the country the 11th Circuit is in. Go ahead and tell them.
Well, it looks to me like it's Louisiana.
So that's a great joke, Alex. You were just joking because you very well know that Louisiana is in the 5th Circuit. But go ahead and tell them where the 11th Circuit is. Go ahead, tell them.
Man, you know, I was so sure about what I just said.
You're such a jokester.
Oh,
man. What a comedian you are. Go ahead, tell them where the 11th Circuit, the part of the country that that's in. Go ahead, tell them.
What are you doing with your hand there?
This is a prodding motion to prod you. To go ahead and tell them.
Have you ever prodded anything before?
Well, we can talk about that off the air if you don't mind.
That backdoor legislation.
So, as Alex was saying, the 11th Circuit is in the southeast part of the country. It encompasses Florida, Georgia, and Alabama. So, this is where this William Pryor character sits. And according to Cable News Network, he would be a dream candidate for many conservatives. He's a 54-year-old staunch conservative who once called the 1973 landmark abortion decision, Roe v. Wade, the, quote, worst abomination in the history of constitutional law. He, of course, was nominated by George Bush and was very adamant about this characterization of Roe v. Wade, even when he was in his own confirmation hearing for his 11th Circuit gig. And that really goes to kind of what I explained earlier about how that decision came about. And so, you know, that's one choice. Then another choice, is, by the way, what do you think about Mr. Pryor? Is that on your wish list for Supreme Court justices?
Santa, can you bring me a William Pryor?
Who let that kid in here?
Yeah, this is an adult show. This is we're adults here.
Just barely, though.
Just barely. I mean, I don't know anything about him except for, according to CNN, William Pryor, : Roe v. Wade equals abomination. So,
would you like to see Roe v. Wade overturned? Did you think it's an abomination in the way it was decided? Being a constitutional scholar that you are.
Okay, so I'm not sure I agree with him. Roe v. Wade is the worst abomination in the history of constitutional law.
What would you say is the worst abomination in the history of constitutional law?
For example, I feel like Plessy v. Ferguson might be worse. You know, maybe. So not sure I agree with him on that. However, yeah, you know, if you could overturn that, that'd be great. That'd be cool.
Okay. Cool beans, yo.
Cool, y'all.
There's also Dianne Sykes. She's 58 and a breath of fresh air to many conservatives. And she interviewed Clarence Thomas at the Federalist Society, which is kind of a conservative lawyer / law student's paradise. Believe me, I know. It kind of showed that she is a very staunch constitutionalist. She's from Marquette University Law School, and up in Wisconsin, or Wisconsin, as they would say in Wisconsin. And she voted to uphold the voter ID law, you know, that law that says, that horribly racist law that says, hey, show that you're the person you say you are when you vote. It's man, that's the most racist thing since Emmett Till, I'll tell you. Oh, boy.
And for the record, to bring things back to the beginning of this episode, the election was illegitimate, but voter ID laws are also illegitimate, which is something that seems like it would be more of a secure measure for, you know, making these elections make sense, plurality,
Let me ask you a question now. Why do you hate black people so much?
You know, just they've never been nice to me. And by they, I mean you.
That is not an unfair point. So she's for the voter ID law. By the way, the Supreme Court already upheld a voter ID law case in the last decade. And she sided with the closely held corporations in a challenge to Obamacare's contraception mandate, which mandates employers to cover birth control. You know, there are certain corporations that believe that the pill is, you know, a form of abortion because after the egg is fertilized, then that's conception, and they think that life begins at conception. And, you know, if we're going to draw a bright red line as to where life begins, that's not a bad place to start.
Fertilizing or conception?
They're the same thing and not try to show me up on my own show. I'd appreciate that. So that's the conception, we're just going to say. And
you wonder why I hate black people.
So maybe she'll be in if she's 58. And we want someone who's going to be in there a long time. But no, she'll be a good 15, 20 years, I think. Then there's Raymond Kethledge, who clerked for Justice Kennedy. Anthony Kennedy, by the way, has been a very squishy, middle-of-the-road, not-so-conservative justice, so I'm really not sure about this guy. He rejected a Fourth Amendment claim from two defendants who were convicted of several robberies based on records from their wireless carriers. So that's an interesting way to try to define who a robber is by looking at their cell phone records without a warrant. That would be interesting. So he's apparently not for expanding government power under the Fourth Amendment, which is always a good thing. Then there's Joan Larson. Ooh, Joan Larson, clerk for Justice Scalia, known as a dark horse. Wow, that's racist too. Jeez. She hasn't been on the bench that long, but apparently she has some conservative rulings. We've got who do we have next, Alex?
Are you asking me to say his name because you don't know how to say it?
I mean, that's...
I don't know how to say it. Steve Colleton? Colon? Steve Colon? Steve Colloton? Steve Colotion? I don't know.
Fine.
How do you say that?
We'll pretend that's the way. That
Steve Cottontail?
Steve Cottontail.
Little
that's
Stevie
who
Cottontail?
It is. Yes. What is notable about this guy?
He's from Iowa. Another George W. Bush appointee, which seems to be a common theme. DC insider, Ivy Leaguer.
And
he
worked
praised
for Kenneth Starr, who did the Bill Clinton investigation. So that's interesting.
All right, cool. Praised by Senator Chuck Grassley as being, quote, extremely well qualified.
Well, if Chuck Grassley says it, then it must be true.
That's what I always say.
Who's next?
Is this another person whose name you can't pronounce?
Just to say, who's next?
Neil Gorsuch. Gorsuch?
Gorsuch. Let's say Gorsuch.
Gorsuch.
What do we know about this guy?
Another Ivy Leaguer. Serves on the 10th Circuit. Let's see. It says here, he's been critical of judges giving too much deference to federal agencies as well as the issue of criminalization.
So
I'm down with that. That sounds cool.
If we'd had him in the Obama era, then there would have been a lot more overturning of some of these rulings by some of these agencies, like the EPA, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Next.
Wow. All right. Amul Thapar.
Sure.
Amul Thapar.
Who is he?
District Court Judge, Eastern District of Kentucky. Let's see. Says he was born in Michigan and served in government as well as private practice. He would bring trial court experience. In 2007, he was the first South Asian American to be named an Article III federal judgeship.
Now, it's interesting that he would bring trial court experience because obviously the Supreme Court is as far removed from the trial court as you get in the judicial system.
Mm-hmm.
This is appellate court experience all the way. I would think that one would need because trial would have happened a long time ago by the time you get to the Supreme Court. So that is fascinating if that is qualifying.
It seems like he's pretty young. Maybe he's just sort of a...
And he's got a bit of melanin in him, apparently.
Yeah.
So
maybe he's sort of a token.
Let's check the box.
Yeah.
There's Senator Mike Lee from Utah. He has no melanin. But he's a Tea Party favorite. He's a strong critic of Donald Trump during the primaries and the general election, quite frankly. After that Access Hollywood video, he put together a very shoddily produced Facebook video telling Donald Trump to drop out with his face right into the camera. Because when old folks try to use young folks' technology, that's what happens. Just a PSA for all you old folks.
Did
out
you
there.
See Ben Carson trying to play the piano?
I did not.
Oh.
I heard his wife sing, though, but I didn't
hear it. It's horrific. Facebook Live.
Okay. Well, Ben Carson and I are like two peas in some sort of, well.
Do tell.
Actually, I'm going to retract the comment. Now, Senator Lee didn't support Trump, but he is a very staunch constitutionalist and would give conservatives great joy. There's also our very own Don Willett of Texas. Yeehaw. He's a Supreme Court justice here, and he tweets quite a bit. He's actually very witty with his tweets, and he'll tweet a meme or a GIF or any sort of other type of thing. He's very well known for that, and he actually called Donald Trump Darth Trump at one point. So
hilarious.
That's interesting.
That would be very funny.
We've also got David Strass, who clerks for Justice Thomas, who actually is my favorite justice and has written extensively about the Constitution and things like that. He had an opinion on the confirmation process in a book that he wrote, or a book review essay, saying amidst greater polarization in American politics, the process for nominating and confirming federal judges has become more political than ever. And boy, oh boy, has it ever. You know, back in the day, back in the Reagan era, the Senate would basically kind of rubber stamp the president's choice, unless it was really, really extreme, because they figure that elections have consequences and the president gets to choose who he wants for the Supreme Court and we'll just go right along. But nowadays, ever since maybe the Clarence Thomas fiasco, you know, it's been one partisan battle, a close, narrow majority confirmation after another. And we expect the same with Donald Trump if you listen to the Daily Coast at all, anyway. Thomas Hardiman cited Justice Scalia in his gun control decision, and he disagreed with a New Jersey court that prohibited handgun possession without a permit. So is handgun possession without a permit something that you're okay with, A-Rig? On constitutional grounds, anyway?
Handgun possession without a permit? Frankly, yes.
You tell.
So, how about you?
Well, I want to see, I don't know why you agree, why you think what you think first before we get to me. Why do you think that it's A-okay? Frankly, you said frankly as if you were kind of sheepishly tiptoeing your way into that position.
Yeah, frankly, it's okay with me.
But why?
Possession is not carrying it around.
Possession is 9/10 of the law, as they say. Although that might be in a different context than this particular. Interesting.
So, yeah.
You know, if we're going to follow the Constitution the way the founders intended, then we should be able to carry handguns with or without a permit. And so did Mr. Hardiman believe.
Possess handguns, not necessarily carry them. That's what this is about.
Yes. But even in New Jersey, we couldn't even possess handguns. And by we, I mean they. Next up is Raymond Grinder. Grinder. Straight out of not Compton, but the Eighth Circuit. And he was being attacked for his supposed hostility to the women's right to access reproductive care. By access, just so we're clear, that means someone else should pay for it and they should get it for free. That's what access means in this particular case, just so we're clear. Grinder thinks that you should pay for things that you buy when it comes to your nether regions if you're a female.
Mm-hmm.
And that would think for males too, because, you know, the males have nether regions too, I'm told. I haven't verified that, but that's what I'm told.
Even after all your years legislating?
Going through the back door. Yeah, even after that, yeah.
Man.
He's also...
Sometimes we just, like, keep our eyes closed and just, you know, gut it up and do it, right?
Well...
Not pay attention to our surroundings.
I like going in with my eyes wide open, actually.
Well, then I can't explain how you missed.
That's up there with the great pyramids of the great mysteries of the world. He's also, this contraception case surrounded a female employee where he cited against that employee whose prescription contraception was not covered by the company plan. Grinder said that the railroad company's denial of coverage for contraception for both sexes did not discriminate against its female employees. So, okay, I was right. He doesn't want you paying for other people's contraception, whether they be male or female. Now, Margaret Ryan, another choice of Trump's, is a military person in that she is a former active duty Marine who serves in the communications office as a communications officer, also a judge advocate, and an aide-de-camp, whatever that means. So, you know, she served in Desert Shield and Desert Storm. So that'd be one tough cookie, as they say, as a Supreme Court justice. What military operations have you served in, Alex?
Operation Backdoor Legislation.
you know how to take a joke and make it recurring like no one else. That's for darn sure. And then there's the wild card of Ted Cruz. He actually was not on the list for whatever reason, probably because, you know, that was during the primaries, the tail end of the primaries, after Cruz had dropped out, but before the convention where Donald Trump first came up with his list for the first part of it. You know, I don't think there would be a whole lot of complaining by conservatives at the very least, even though he wasn't really on the list and Donald Trump promised to nominate from the list. And even some Senate Democrats might not mind this because it would get Ted Cruz, their arch nemesis of the Senate.
Yeah.
You know, Ted Cruz was blamed for the government shutdown in 2013, even though, you know, the senator can't unilaterally shut down the government. But that's neither here nor there.
I think this would be a very interesting move.
Why is that?
If he did that. Well, it says right here, I mean, you were just touching on this, but it would kill two potential birds with one stone. It would be appointing a conservative and at the same time clearing him out of the political arena. Because, you know, everyone hates Ted Cruz, basically, in politics, you know, left and right.
Left and rhino. That's what you mean.
What?
Left and rhino.
And rhino.
Republican in name only, as you know.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Ugh. So
that's what I say to rhinos too. Ugh.
Yeah. Ugh. Rhinos. So anyway, I think, you know, if Trump were to do that, I think conservatives would really get behind that because he's, definitely, he's got the conservative
bona fides.
Yeah. Credentials.
or that.
And,
even what about the fact that it wasn't on the list? Even, he promised to nominate from the list.
That's true. That's true. So he's probably not going to do it, but I think it would be a very interesting move.
Maybe he'll do it on the second go around. If we've got a lot of old justices. We got Stephen Breyer and Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Clarence Thomas.
People are dropping like flies.
We don't wish ill, obviously, on our Supreme Court.
You just compared them to fossils.
Well, fossils are very rare and valuable findings by archaeologists, obviously, so come on. So the Supreme Court battle is coming up in January, and that'll be a great spectacle to watch. And coming up for us next week is our big Christmas-themed show where we recount all the fancy-schmancy Christmas memories that we have and look forward as to what Santa Claus is going to bring us this year. So don't miss that. It's going to be great. But for now, sudden death is suddenly off the air. We'll see you next week.
Bye now.